Welcome back. There's been a lot of in-person activism here and around the country. Yesterday, protests went late into the night, including police clearing an area protesters declared an autonomous zone. But there are many people who aren't in the streets, instead participating virtually. Social media activism is not a new concept. We've covered it on this show. However, in this moment, the fight for racial equality is gaining tremendous traction online. The Black Lives Matter movement is seeing more support than ever before. This support is even more evident on social media, where, according to the Pew Research Center, the hashtag Black Lives Matter was tweeted over 8 million times on the day of George Floyd's death. So, how are activists using social media to spread their messages about racial equality? And how effective is it? Joining us to have this conversation is Jacqueline Lebain, organizer for Freedom Fighters DC. Jacqueline Lebain, thank you for joining us.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to be here.
Jacqueline Lebain, were you involved in events last night in person or on social?
I was involved in actions on social media last night due to being pepper sprayed the night before. So I was home clearing and rinsing out my eyes and rinsing my body because, as you've seen on social media and different videos that have arisen, the police did pepper spray us, even though it was banned a couple weeks ago in DC area. So I was one of the few that got pepper sprayed. So I was resting last night, but we did have some people on the grounds just, you know, providing medical work and supplies needed for those people.
What to you is so different? What to you is so special about this moment in time?
What is so special to me is seeing how many people have finally woken up to the injustices that are happening in this country and that are putting their lives on the line to fight in the midst of COVID. We're seeing a record number of first-time protesters, youth getting involved, so many people from different backgrounds, different races, genders, sexual orientation, religion, all over social media and in person. We're seeing just this huge influx in people, you know, finally standing up for our Black brothers and sisters, which is amazing.
Also joining us is Dr. Sherry Williams, assistant professor in race, media, and communication at American University. Sherry Williams, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
What role have social media played during this movement?
I think it's played a really important and significant role because a lot of what I've seen is an extension of what has already been happening, especially in terms of what we saw in Ferguson, which is, you know, protesters, advocates calling for the arrest of police, but also organizing actions, letting people know where acts of resistance will take place, instructing people how to resist white supremacy, educating and informing people about the issues and really explaining other related racial social justice issues, how to care for one another. And really one thing that I think is really important that is that I'm seeing a lot of is while folks are out resisting police brutality, they are also documenting the police brutality that they're experiencing. And also, I think it's really important that these activists are telling their own story of the uprising, using their own words, images, and visuals without the traditional mainstream media framing. So there's a lot happening on social media that I think is beneficial, not only for the activists and advocates, but also for the public at large.
Jacqueline Lebain, tell us about Freedom Fighters. Who are they and what are your goals?
Of course. So Freedom Fighters DC is a newly formed nonprofit organization focused in the DC area. Our board is 90% Black women. We just want to make that very clear. We are run majority by Black women. And Freedom Fighters DC seeks liberation for all Black people through the eradication of fascism, white supremacy, and racism. We are a collective of like-minded people based in the DC area committed to these sentiments, and we were formed in response to the killings of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. Our main focus is defunding the police and redistributing these funds back into our communities in programs such as mental health, education, and food and housing insecurities, because so many studies show that if you put funding and more funding into these programs, the crime rates are going to plummet. We wouldn't even need the police presence we have now if we adequately funded our communities. We're also demanding that no new jails be built in DC. We are demanding the immediate abolition of the Metro Transit Police. And we are demanding investment by DC government into non-police, non-punitive violence prevention services and mental health care. So those are our main focuses.
Jacqueline LeBain, what role did social media play in Freedom Fighters DC getting started?
Of course. So actually, social media is the reason that we started and what gave us the opportunity to start. One of our founders, Philomena, she tweeted out, is anyone wanting to get involved in DC protests? And I just moved to DC for an internship. So I liked the tweet because I have been involved previously and I wanted to get involved here. And at first it was just going to be like kind of protest buddies. We just wanted to make sure that everyone had a buddy to go to protests so they weren't alone, that they were safe. And after time, we realized that no one was really organizing. We didn't see any action happening in DC. So, you know, through social media, through different channels and group chats, we formed this organization and we've just had an outpouring of support from, you know, actually all over the world. We've gotten donations from numerous different countries and states all over the country. So social media gave us the opportunity to start this organization.
Sherry Williams, of course, modern technology has a reach that's new. What does it mean that someone can put a message out to thousands, even millions, on social media or online immediately today?
I think it means that some of the concerns, issues, and injustice that Black people experience can no longer be so easily hidden, and it can be amplified quickly and without a lot of traditional framing and stigmatization. Because I think what we often see when we see any issues that concern Black people that show up in the media, there's a lot of traditional framing around that. And there are ways, particularly in which Black victims of crime are somehow blamed for the situation that led to the circumstances of their death, or we see really what amounts to a character assassination of these folks. But when we are able to, when activists are able to tell their stories directly without that filtering, and without these several steps that stories have to go through in mainstream media newsrooms, then we don't really see that. We see more of a free flow of information, and we see information not stagger. Because one of the things that I think is interesting about Ahmaud Arbery's death is that it happened so long ago, but it didn't really come to light until folks started talking about it on social media. So I think what social media affords activists and Black activists in particular is a way to be able to connect directly and amplify their messages and really filter through a lot of the traditional gatekeeping that happens through mainstream media.
I want to talk a little bit more about that traditional gatekeeping in terms of how the news is presented. What are you seeing on social media, and how is it different than what we see in mainstream news?
Well, for me, especially during the early days of these protests, so toward like the end of May and early June, probably like the first 2 weeks or maybe the first 8 or 9 days, a lot of what I was seeing on television was a lot of property damage on a loop, a lot of smashing of windows and fires and things like that. I mean, that is all I was seeing. And I'm somebody who consumes a tremendous amount of news, right? But I'm talking about broadcast news specifically, but some of this applies to print media also. So really what I saw on the television was what in communication studies we call the protest paradigm. And the protest paradigm basically just says that whenever we see any type of dissent in the United States, it will always be covered in a way that is stigmatized and that delegitimizes what the protesters are actually asking for. And we actually don't even see a focus on the issues, but we see a focus on the physical presence. And maybe if that presence causes a nuisance, like if folks are standing in the middle of of the street, or if there's like a framing called like the riot frame, when we will see, you know, focus on like the so-called looting and that kind of stuff. But on social media, what I was seeing was on my other screen, my mobile phone screen, I'm seeing activists actually talk about what defunding means. When they talk about defund police, what that actually means, and where they want those dollars to be reallocated. I'm seeing issues besides defunding, what it's like to actually live in a particular city like Louisville, for example, and how the police and community relations are there. So what I saw on social media were more layered and contextual stories about the issues and not a lot of the looting and riot frame that I was seeing on television.
Jacqueline LeBain, would you agree? How different is the storyline between social media and the mass media?
No, of course. What they were just saying is that was beautifully said. There is such a difference in what we see on social media and what we're seeing in the mainstream media. Personally, like, my parents have called me and they're like, and they all they see is the rioting, and all they see on the news and what we see on the news is, you know, what the person just spoke before me said is, we're seeing the rioting, we're seeing the looting. We're not seeing the peaceful protests, protesters who are engaging and being peaceful, and the police are still being violent towards them. We're not seeing that, and we're seeing that on social media. We're seeing videos of police brutality against peaceful protesters. We're seeing so many different things that we're not seeing on the mainstream news, because that doesn't draw attention. What draws attention and what gets people talking is the rioting and looting, which is only, you know, 1% of the protests that are going on right now. Freedom Fighters DC has had troubles with that before. Just looking at the stories that have been written about us, and how different what we said and what was printed was. So it's definitely a more raw image that you see on social media, a more real perception of what's going on the grounds and on these streets that you don't see in major news.
Jacqueline LeBain, we got a tweet from Bill. How can an organization such as Freedom Fighters accept tax-deductible donations when they just got started? Can you accept tax-deductible donations?
No. The people, we have made it very clear that the people who have donated to us, we are a newly found organization, so we are not available to issue tax write-offs as of now.
Sherry Williams, social media and the web give pretty much anyone a megaphone. What are the pros and the cons of that?
Well, I think one big pro is that when we think about traditional mainstream media and who has been shut out, it's definitely the people who are taking to the streets and once again calling for liberation and equality and equity in this country, primarily Black people, right? So, and we know that there are not very many Black people working in newsrooms. We know that when mainstream media comes to cover Black communities and other communities of color, it is either in instances where there is crime, chaos, or some sort of pain going on. So what social media does is it gives Black people an opportunity to tell their stories regardless of what's happening. So I personally see the way that Black activists use social media as an extension of the Black press. Because, I mean, even if we think about this 1960s civil rights era, and even before 1960, like 1955 and such, it was Black-owned media, Jet and Ebony magazines, that really told those stories and documented those stories, as well as smaller Black papers across the country. So Emmett Till's photo of his bloated body that was captured for the world to see, that was published by Black media. So a lot of these images that we're seeing today are published by Black activists on social media. So I think it's really important for us to really understand that one of the reasons why we see Black people using social media so much is because our voices are not present the way that they should be in mainstream media. And even just to kind of go back to how media is covering this, one term that I have heard a lot, which is particularly disturbing to me, is newscasters using the term outside agitators, and not as a quote, not quoting authorities, but using it themselves. And that's really troubling because we know that that is the language of Bull Connor. And we know that Bull Connor was one of the biggest white supremacists in the country and one of the biggest foes and adversaries for social justice and civil rights advocates back then. But even with that being said, moving on, coming back to the current day, there are a lot of benefits for social media and that Black folks can use it to tell their own stories. But at the same time, social media is also where white supremacists, misogynists, and other people who are totally against freedom, justice, and liberation, those ideas also thrive on social media. Because we know that, especially back in 2017, when there was the big protest at the white supremacist presence at the University of Virginia, they were coalescing and working with each other on social media channels. So social media, it does democratize an opportunity for people to share their information, but that just doesn't only mean people who are working toward freedom and justice. It also means white supremacists who wants to maintain the status quo can also use those tools.
Where does President Trump fall on that? He was among the first prominent politicians to circumvent established media by posting on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, I think he is actually one of the people who I'm talking about. I mean, I don't think that it is out of tune to say that he is a white supremacist. I mean, his policies and rhetoric and pretty much everything has done has shown us that. I mean, it is the proof. And really, if we look at President Trump's Twitter account, that is not only an archive of lies, but it's also an archive of his racism and his white supremacist rhetoric and also policy. So, yeah, he's also a part of that.
Here's Pete in Northeast Washington. Pete, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I wanted to respond to the earlier question about the difference I'm seeing in mainstream media's portrayal and social media. And specifically, I wanted to talk about Mayor Bowser's putting up of the mural saying Black Lives Matter and renaming the street Black Lives Matter Plaza. In mainstream media, I saw just glowing, gushing praise for, you know, an incredible, brave rebuke of President Trump, and, you know, everyone just ate it up. But as soon as you go on social media and listen to the people who are plugged in the D.C. activist scene and know what's been going on around here, you know that Mayor Bowser has done almost nothing to support the Black Lives Matter movement. And that was just a really glaring difference I saw in the coverage and reality.
Jacqueline LeBain, care to respond to that?
No, I would. I mean, I would agree. Being, you know, Freedom Fighters DC, we want more than a mural. We want actual policy changes. We want to see the redistribution of funds. So from our side, it was definitely a publicity stunt, and it was glorified on the media like that was supposed to change something.
We only have about a minute left, Sherry Williams, but digital activism has been given other names at times, including slacktivism, the idea that firing off a tweet is just not enough. Do you think the movement right now is activating real change?
Yeah, I do think that it's activating real change. And I also feel like social media is something that people, and particularly older people, don't necessarily take seriously because of ways in which young people use it. But I mean, I think anyone will tell you, anyone who is in any type of activist space, whether it is ground roots or grassroots activism, or even more corporate activism, knows that in order for them to be effective, they're going to have a social media strategy. Like, they have to use social media in order to circululate information and even to use it as a tool to coalesce around. It's almost like the telephone today. You cannot.
I got to interrupt because that's all the time we have. Dr. Sherry Williams, Jacqueline LeBain, thank you both for joining us. This segment on social media and racial activism was produced by Richard Cunningham, and our conversation with Sandy Greenberg was produced by Lauren Marco. Coming up tomorrow, protests for racial equality have reignited calls for Confederate statues across the region to be removed. Some protesters have even started taking matters into their own hands, tearing down statues themselves. We'll explore the debates over the monuments and the history behind behind them. Plus, the past is never the past. Every headline has a history. The hosts of NPR's Throughline join us to look at current events through the lens of history. That all starts tomorrow at noon. Until then, thank you for listening and stay safe. I'm Kojo Nambi.
The Kojo Nambi Show is produced by Julie Devenbrock, Sydney Grannon, Lauren Marco, Kurt Gardner, Richard Cunningham, and Kayla Hewitt. Our managing producer is Mana Kashvi. Our engineer is Mike Kidd. For past shows and more content, visit kojoshow.org.
Thanks for listening to The Kojo Nambi Show, and if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at wamu.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.